Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for the week in which party leaders off the November 8 election pick their leadership in both Washington and Madison. J.R., let's start with our state assembly.
Yes.
So we had the Assembly Republicans gain one, 64-35. Is my math right?
Biggest majority since the 1950s.
Right. So let's look at, no surprise there, Speaker Robin Voss reelected without a challenger. Jim Steinke had a challenger. Voss is from Racine County. Majority Leader Steinke is from Outagamie County. And we have a new addition. The Assistant Majority Leader is Representative Bob Brooks in his second term. We'll come around to that later. The Speaker Pro Tem didn't change. Tyler August from Walworth, Lake Geneva. Caucus Chair is Dan Knodel, who moved from Assistant Majority Leader to Caucus Chair. He's from Washington County. And John Nygren will again be co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. Any big surprises before we hear from Speaker Voss?
No. With Speaker Voss, nobody's going to challenge Robin Voss at 64 members. What's interesting, though, is Steinke drew a challenger in Kevin Peterson. And in making calls this week, it seems like the first reaction from people is, oh, well, Steinke was part of the Never Trump crowd. He's also part of this call from leadership in the Assembly to be open to a gas tax hike or some kind of revenue upper for transportation. That may have driven it. But in making calls, the impression I get is that people were looking for maybe a counterweight to Robin, because anytime you get a group that big, you know, there are people who chafe under certain leadership styles and they want to have somebody to stand up for them. So that may have been more what was going on with Peterson challenging Steinke. Now we'll never know the vote total. Those are done in secret.
And Mr. Peterson never even spoke to the caucus. He really didn't.
And Rob Brooks, part of what I think when talking to him last week, why he wanted to run, he said, we want better communication with the rank and file. So there's a little bit of undercurrent of, we want to hear more from the leadership. We'll be more in tune with what's going on. But again, at 64 members, you've got a lot of people to manage, and it's kind of harder to do than at like 55 members.
And you've heard the theory that it's so much easier to make the trains leave on time when you only have 51 or 52. When you have 64, you have riches, and you have a tendency to have bigger disputes, potentially.
Well, everybody, they know that they're not needed for a boat. So when you're at 50 or 51, you know, I'm needed on every single roll call, every single vote. At 64, you go, well, I don't like that bill. I can go off my own and do what I want to do. So it does make it harder to manage sometimes. The other thing is, Republicans, we've been waiting for a while now. Do they ever go too far and the pendulum swings back in Wisconsin? It hasn't happened yet.
No,
maybe
it
never will. But you will see a lot of efforts this next session of trying to beat back the ideas from the fringe. I don't say that in a disparaging way, but the outer limits of the caucus, what do they want to do? What bill do they come up with that may not be good for the majority? Because again, you know, at 64, there are a lot more ideas out there and a lot of people in the middle who don't want to vote on those kinds of bills.
Is the term alt-right? We've heard that term a little bit.
I don't know if we've seen that really in the assembly, but nationally, yeah, that's something that's been popular to talk about lately.
Let's take a minute and listen to Speaker Voss, who discussed their victory and his hope that the Trump administration will make Wisconsin a laboratory for democracy. Speaker Voss.
We're going to work in this chamber, in this room, on figuring out a long-term funding structure for transportation. We're going to figure out a way to make sure that we can continue to invest in our public schools, and we are going to continue to work on making sure that the state government that we have control of is as efficient and effective and small as it possibly can be while still getting things done for the people. Republicans have a chance to devolve power from Washington with the first united Republican government since 1928. The place that we are today is going to be at the center of economic and political and government reform over the course of the next 2 years. We want the end of overreach. We want the balance of power coming back to states. And that's why all of us in this room, I know this would actually be a unanimous vote, perhaps even bringing in the Democrats. They want states to be laboratories of democracy. We want to be the ones to solve problems and to find long-term solutions.
JR, what Speaker Voss was saying is Wisconsin given its connections to Washington, Ryan, Priebus, Governor Walker, now he's head of the RGA. Welcome. Please bring all your experiments here. Yeah. So check me if I'm wrong. This opens a door to some experimental programs with the Trump administration, experimental partnerships between Washington, the federal government, on transportation, health care, jobs, economic development, and you heard Trump say, we need to address our inner cities. Well, what inner city needs more help than inner city Milwaukee?
The question still is, how is Trump going to govern, and what's it going to mean? Is Paul Ryan, for example, going to drive the train on policy? He's had 2 decades worth of ideas pent up, waiting for the opportunity to drive this all through. He's finally in a position of leadership, and with a Republican president, Republican Senate, that he could possibly do some of these things. So will Trump defer to Ryan on, you know, all these big entitlement programs, the tax overhaul, will that be Ryan's baby, or is it going to be Trump trying to drive the discussion and what he wants to do?
Okay, let's circle back. One more thing that I forgot to ask you about. The new assistant majority leader, Bob Brooks, he's in his second term. Mm-hmm. What did he achieve in the first term that made him suddenly leadership caliber?
Well, part of it is, look at the big freshman and sophomore classes that they have this session. So there'll be sophomores and juniors next session, but there are a lot of new people, and they want more of a voice. I mean, I think that's part of what I said, that he asked for more communication. You know, we want more communication from the top down. I get the impression this is part of that kind of group of lawmakers having a seat at the table going forward.
Okay, now let's talk about Assembly Democrats. Minority Leader Barker was reelected. Without opposition. He's been reelected since January of 2011, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, so he will have 2 more years as a Democratic leader. Diane Hesselbein, well, first of all, let's talk about Katrina Shanklin. Jocasta Zamarripa chose not to seek leadership jobs again.
Katrina was the assistant this session, and talking to her, she pointed out that after last Tuesday, she's the only Democrat in central Wisconsin representing that region in either house. You have to go from Stevens Point over to Eau Claire, Oshkosh, or Green Bay for the nearest Democratic lawmaker to her. So she felt like she didn't take care of things back home. Side note, maybe she's going to run for the state senate in 4 years. You know, Pat Tessin won that seat at losses.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, help being spreading her name ID around that area. You never know. Jocasta, from what I've been told by Democrats, she began this project in October trying to turn out more Hispanic voters in her district. Mm-hmm. Did a TV ad in Milwaukee to kind of help do that. She seems to be more interested in working on that effort back home than in being in these leadership meetings. And oh, by the way, with a President Trump, there's obviously some anxiety in the Hispanic community about what's this going to mean for us. So there are a lot of issues for her to deal with the, you know, the community back home that might need more of her attention than being in the caucus leadership.
And then caucus chair, former Representative Jorgensen, chose not to seek reelection. Mm-hmm. He ran for Rock County clerk. He
did not make
that.
It.
Mm-hmm. But you have another Rock County representative in second term, Mark Spreitzer.
Yes, freshman going to sophomore year. Yep.
Yep. And then caucus vice chair Steve Doyle. Doyle seems to be emerging as a strategist. Agree?
He has been for a while.
La Crosse.
I mean, he is the only Democrat who holds a Republican-leaning seat in the state assembly. And he survived both the wave of 14, the Trump wave of 16. So he's figured out a formula that works. Now, Doyle is unique in that he's also been the county board and has a much higher profile than the average state assemblyman. So that might be a little bit different. But he is an outstate lawmaker. And what is the problem for Democrats right now? Communicating to outstate voters, particularly white, blue-collar voters in the Chippewa Falls area, in southwestern Wisconsin, in western Wisconsin. That's kind of their next task is how do we communicate with those folks better.
Yeah, and when you talk about Democrats appealing to voters, let's listen, to how Peter Barca said, we need a total reassessment top to bottom. Let's listen to what Minority Leader Barca told his caucus on the eve of his reelection.
And I've always felt the strength of a legislative body is its diversity. And of course, there's no secret, you get a lot more diversity in the Democratic caucus than you do in the Republican caucus. Working class people are not clear that their lot in life is better cast with Democrats than Republicans. As it seems is the case, we have some very serious reanalysis, some in-depth discussions, some grassroots efforts, to try to explore how that could possibly be the case. We really need to do a total reassessment. We have to look from top to bottom, and we need your ideas. We need your imagination. We need your involvement. I sure you feel like I do. You can't possibly like what's going on in this state. But the good news is the people of Wisconsin don't like what's going on in this state. The majority of the people of this state feel we are going in the wrong direction. The gold standard for Democratic operations were always Minnesota and Iowa. And you know what? They lost their state Senate and lost more seats in the Assembly. So we need to become the gold standard for what you can do.
Yeah, I want to stay with this a little bit. Who is Peter Barker going to rely on to do the, quote, total reassessment top to bottom? Where is he going to get the expertise?
Good question. He talked about members of the congressional delegation, Senator Baldwin, I mean, kind of doing an overall party effort. What's interesting is
Senator Baldwin, who's up in 2 years,
yes.
How much time is she going to have to?
Well, I think that the party itself has a little bit of a soul searching to do. How do we communicate better to those folks that we were talking about before? And it's not just at the state level. It's a national issue for Democrats of how do we communicate with these folks in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, who we used to win reliably, and they flipped to Trump this year. How do we win those folks back? What's interesting about this, the Assembly Democrat Caucus, is that Barca now is, when he took over in 2011, they were at 38. They're down to 34. That's usually not what gets you reelected minority leader or leader in either house, either caucus, time I've been here. But the problem they have, one of the problems they have with Assembly Democrats is that nobody had laid the foundation to run for leader. They either seem to have assumed they'd pick up seats because of presidential year, should be better Dem turnout, we should do better, you know, maybe pick up a couple of these seats here that are swing ones and there'll be no reason to challenge Peter, or they don't grasp the concept that you and I've been around for a long time. When you run for leader back in the old days, and I mean old days like 15 years ago, you did it after you had made connections with your fellow colleagues by doing doors for them, by raising money and doling it out to build networks, and by being a team player who showed I am prepared to be leader. Some of the folks here don't seem to have grasped that concept and seem more to think, oh, well, if I'm well-liked, I've got new ideas, I should be leader. That's not how it works. Peter Barca, you know, and I talked to numerous Democrats over the last week who were unhappy about how the election turned out, the decisions that were made, that this has been coming for on down the line. None of them, though, had put in the work that Peter did. And they'll all tell you, Peter is the one who does the doors. He raises the money. He does also, that's just not what minority leader is about. It's also about, like, the social stuff. Like, if you have a problem, you know, you go to the minority leader sometimes. Peter calls people on their birthdays. You know, he just makes those connections. It is old school shoe leather legwork. And I'm not sure that other members in the caucus have quite grasped that concept or read for it.
Okay, but Representative Barker could have said, you know, I gave this my best shot for three sessions, for 6 years, and we continue to lose, so it's time for me to step aside. You all know how hard I work. And 2 years ago, Representative Evan Goyke challenged him, came pretty close, I think, to taking him out. But Goyke, who is 33 and Peter Barker is 61, passed this time. And I have this question. When Representative Shanklin steps aside, when Joe Costa Zamarripa steps aside, others who could have challenged Peter, Dana Walks out of Eau Claire, Gordon Hintz out of Oshkosh, Evan again, or even Chris Taylor. Why was there no challenge?
I talked to Gordon. His wife is going to do this spring. He has a family commitment, you know, that takes him his time. He's already in finance. I talked to Evan. He had thought about it but said, no, I've got issues in my district back home. The Sherman Park neighborhood is part of his district in Milwaukee. Obviously, he's signing some violent outbursts this summer. There, you go down the line. Dana Walks, we all think he wants to run for governor in 2 years. That seems to be like the vibe about him lately. So again, either they have the foundation or have something else. You know, there are a number of members in that caucus who are young and up-and-comers, but they've got an eye back home on like running for mayor or county executive or something that's the path they see for them politically. So again, they weren't prepared or willing to do the work that Peter does.
Well, okay, but what about the subtle younger generation push? When Representative Jonathan Brostoff said, no, let's not cast a unanimous ballot. I want a vote. Mr. Brostoff is 33, just like Evan Goyke. So you see some of this generational tension and frustration emerging, don't you?
Well, the Dems have a boomer problem. I mean, just look at the race for minority leader in the House. Nancy Pelosi is how old?
Nancy Pelosi is 76. She's being challenged by Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan, who's 43.
You have this Generation X kind of group of Dems who are chomping the bit, and millennials now, chomping the bit to be in leadership, to see things change. And there's a little bit of a generational divide sometimes, in both nationally and state level.
Okay, and just before we finishing up with assembly leaders, just to point out, of the 10 assembly leaders that we know, including John Nygren, Joint Finance, only one of which is a woman, Diane Hesselbein from Dane County. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's turn the corner. Senate Republicans chose their leaders. Reelected was Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald of Dodge County, Assistant Majority Leader Leah Vukmir of Wauwatosa. Senate President Roger Roth is emerging as a leader from Appleton, and President Pro Tem Howard Markline from Southwest Wisconsin. Caucus Chair is Sheila Harsdorf from River Falls, and Joint Finance Co-Chair, is Alberta Darling of the Milwaukee suburb of River Hills. Any surprises there specifically? I didn't know Roger Roth wanted to be president and presiding officer of the Senate.
It wasn't something I was focused on ahead of the election. I mean, but with Fitz, I mean, he came back at 20. Nobody's going to, maybe, depending on how this expected recount goes with Jennifer Schilling's race, which is at 56 votes right now. Maybe they get to 21, though it's tough to overturn even a 50-vote lead in a race like that. So with Fitz, there's no way, again, with like Robin, when you win, nobody's going to challenge you. Likewise, Leah had been that thought before that the team won, mm-hmm. so the people in the incumbents in those positions, they win too. Mm-hmm. With Roger, Mary Lozick signed out to seek re-election this year, so that's why that spot opened up. So no real big changes other than that.
Roger Roth will be tied for the second youngest Senate president in history, tied with Brian Rood. They're both 38. Howard Markline is a forensic CPA. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
In that spot, the late Ruth Goodex had that seat. He announced he wasn't seeking re-election before he had passed away. So that was open, again, for somebody to step into it. So then, Sheila, one of the only ones from out western Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Of course, a third of the population is from the western two-thirds of the state. And then Alberta, if I've got this right, she is now in her fifth term as co-chair, or will be in her fifth term as co-chair. The record that I found is 6. Some guy had that years ago. It'll be the third straight session with the same two co-chairs, which has not happened previously in committee history. There is one example where the same two people were co-chair for 3 sessions. They had a break between two and three, something like that. So a lot of stability, because Republicans have run the show now,
yeah.
except for that brief period in the recalls where they flipped for a few months and went back. But they've run the show now since 2011. There's stability in the caucuses because they've been in charge and they're winning.
And Senator Fitzgerald immediately named the same 6 Senate Republicans to finance, and let's just go over them. Obviously, co-chair Alberta Darling, Leah Vukmir, Luther Olson, Sheila Harsdorf, Howard Markline, and Tom Tiffany. So
geographic diversity.
Yep.
You have Luther Olson and Sheila Harsdorf, who are perceived as being from the more moderate wing of the party, Vukmir from the more conservative wing of the party, Tiffany from up north. I mean, it's a balanced lineup for him in Senate Finance.
Okay, now, next Tuesday, Senate Democrats are going to meet, but any recount in the 32nd, which is Schilling versus Dan Kopanky, will not be resolved by then.
No.
So why meet?
Well, look at it this way. The vibe I'm getting about that recount, that possible recount, is that they're waiting, or they were as of yesterday afternoon, the Elections Commission is waiting for not just the final numbers, but you have to sign off on a piece of paper. These are final, and fax it in from the boards of canvas. Once that's in, the clock starts ticking for 3 days to request the recount. I don't think anybody wants to be doing a recount on Thanksgiving Day, and so they're trying to get away from that holiday. So now you're talking about a recount maybe starting like the week after Thanksgiving. Then you're talking about a recount that takes 5, 6, 7 days, maybe, depends on how long it takes, whatever it takes. So now you're talking all of a sudden like early to mid-December before you can have a leadership election. Yeah. Now you could go status quo until then and just hold everything still, but there are things that have to move. There's committee assignments to do. There are offices that at some point, once the results are all done.
This is great move in,
yes,
out.
Yes, because all of a sudden you have these seniority things take over where this office is open, this person wants to move. So there are a lot of changes happening or will be happening soon. So you're basically trying to get to it. Plus, I get the impression Schilling wants to portray an image of inevitability.
Yeah.
I won. She's been saying I won since early morning, Wednesday morning last week, even though it was 58 votes, to draw the, or she put out a fundraising appeal earlier this week that Republicans are trying to steal the race, you know, by going to a recount, trying to say that this is my race, I won, let's move forward.
Okay, do you expect anybody to challenge Jennifer Schilling for Senate Democratic
I have been
leader?
Making calls, and there were some rumblings from people in the caucus unhappy about losing a seat with Julie Lassa. But as far as somebody beating her, I have not gotten the impression in my calls so far that anybody's in position to win. Now, here's the other thing. At 13 seats, you only need 7 votes to keep the seat. So it's hard to, you know, Jennifer still got her allies in the caucus. She has 2 people on finance. She has, so if you think about it, the 2 people on finance plus her vote is 3. She's almost halfway there to 7 just with those 3 votes. Again, who did the work to beat her or in a position to challenge her? That's not really clear from my phone call. Is anybody in a position to challenge her for minority leader?
So let's make an assumption that Senator Schilling survives as minority leader, but there will have to be some type of elections. We don't know the rest of the cast yet.
Miller has officially announced he's running for caucus chair.
He's a former leader of Senate Democrats.
Yeah, interesting that a former minority leader coming back to run for caucus chair. But he's also, at this point, one of the more senior members of the caucus.
Right, but nobody is more senior than Senator Fred Risser, the longest-serving legislator in the United States. Mm-hmm. We talked about Paul Ryan earlier. He issued a statement when he was reelected. That'll be formally ratified in January when the next session convenes. Welcome to the dawn of a new unified Republican government. The task ahead of us is enormous if we are going to put our country back on the right track. We have got to be bold, and we have to go big. This country is expecting absolutely no less. I just want to go back to a point you made earlier. We don't know whether the Trump administration is going to let Wonk Ryan actually write mm-hmm. some of these major changes, because you and I covered him on the campaign where he waves this better way for health care and jobs and economic development. But are you surprised there wasn't any type of a Freedom Caucus challenge to him?
No, because time heals all wounds and so does winning. And if you go back, we were sitting here 2 weeks ago before the election, it looked like Trump was going to lose. We all thought the polls were right. Trump was going to lose. It was a matter of, was it going to be a big wave or big election for win for Clinton or not? And then the Trump people and the conservative wing of that caucus would have a natural blame on Paul Ryan. Well, you didn't do enough to help Trump. Well, now Trump has won, and Trump is having a more conciliatory tone about Paul Ryan. That kind of gets wiped away. Now there's the opportunity of, okay, if the Republicans are unified, what can they push through and how quickly? They're talking about repealing Obamacare right away. There's talk about a tax package, talk about entitlement reform. What is going to happen? Who's going to drive that train? And what can they get done? I mean, Trump's talking about an infrastructure, big, huge investment.
Yes.
That does not really jive with the conservative message of smaller government, less spending.
And
how's that going to work
deficit.
Out?
How do you reconcile that $19 trillion deficit?
So how's that all going to work out? So that's kind of interesting to move. But for Ryan, not only does he got now a unified Republican government while he's in a leadership position, he's also got Ryan's Priebus in the White House.
Yes.
He's aligned to Trump to say, hey, we need to do this, and somebody who can advocate for him now. You also have Steve Bannon in the White House, who is not a big fan of Paul Ryan.
Who called him evil once.
So, although Paul Ryan refused this week to kind of slam Trump for the Bannon appointment, obviously Democrats say this guy has got some racist views that we don't like. That's their word. Those are words, not mine. But Dems are saying, hey, you should condemn this guy. And Ryan's saying, no, he helped Trump win, and so I'm going to go on with my life as it is.
You mentioned Ryan's Priebus. He's 44 years old. Mm-hmm. He's had an amazing career. Let's just talk about the touchstones in his career. 1994, he graduates from UW-Whitewater, where he was a close friend with Speaker Voss. Mm-hmm. They were both leaders of young Republicans. 1998, he graduates from University of Miami Law School. 2004, he runs as a Republican, loses to Democratic Senator Bob Wirch. Reince got 47% to 52%. 2007, elected chairman of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. 2010, the Republicans run the election table, mm-hmm. governor and legislature. 2011, on the 7th ballot, elected Republican national chairman. And then all this fall, when all other Republicans, pedigreed Republicans, said pull back from supporting Donald Trump, he went all in mm-hmm. with RNC resources. And then last Sunday, he's named chief of staff. Here's my question. Is he the hardest working guy in Washington? Is he the brightest guy? What's the secret to his success? He's 44.
What's interesting is how many guys you know that go 12 years from losing a state Senate seat to become chief of staff of the White House. What's interesting about Reince's rise is that if you look at it, he rode a great wave in 2010, built a great party structure here, took advantage of it. He also then aligned himself with Michael Steele, remember,
yes,
when Michael Steele ran for RNC chair and was his general counsel. He then engineered basically deposing Steele. He ran against him because the party was spending too much money.
$20 million in debt.
It failed to capitalize on its opportunities in nationally in a wave election. So he then takes over. They lose a presidential election in 2012. He orders an autopsy why they lost. Donald Trump violated almost every single tenet that came out of that autopsy.
He never read the autopsy.
And they still won. So in some ways, yeah, we don't diminish anything Reince has done. But this presidential race was not about, now, operationally, yeah, building infrastructure, yes. But the message that Reince drove with his party of, we need to address our issues with minorities, we need to do this and that, that didn't play at all in how Donald Trump won.
Right.
But now, you know, he stuck with Trump. Part of it was he knew he had to. I mean, you can't back away from your nominee. Even when the darkest days of this campaign for Republicans, you can't back away from nominee, because if you do, then you start to press down ballot turnout. You're talking about the possibility of a wave election going against you because the party is basically spirited. You stuck it out.
Okay.
And it worked out.
Okay, but you didn't answer my question. Is he a brilliant tactician, strategist, or is he the luckiest Republican in America?
Who knows? I mean, I can't say for sure, but he is. You cannot diminish the work that he's put in.
That's true.
The structure he put in place with the state GOP,
okay,
they've expanded, and then the one that he put in place, the RNC. I mean, they built the ground game.
Okay. I don't want to spend a lot of time, and it is a little late for postmortems, but I was so intrigued by what Charlie Sykes said at a UW-Madison panel. He said, there was this cancer at the heart of the movement that I thought I understood. That's a partial quote. Let's listen to about a minute of what Mr. Sykes, the outgoing talk show host on WTMJ Radio in Milwaukee, said of the cancer in conservative republicanism.
Conservatives are in this really very complicated situation, because I will be honest with you that there are a lot of things that will happen that I think I will like, that I think will be positive. On the other hand, there is this cancer at the heart of the movement that I thought that I understood. And I think that that's going to be have long-term implications. My whole life as a conservative, I'm a recovering liberal actually, has been spent saying this caricature that, say, Madison liberals, speaking of caricatures, that liberals have of conservatives as being racist, sexist, xenophobes, is in fact untrue, that we are not really like that. And then what do? We nominate and elect a caricature of every negative stereotype that the left has ever had of the right. And so now I'm faced with seeing many of my friends, many of my allies pushing forward many of the ideas that I would normally support. But at the heart of this is a man who, in fact, I think runs the risk of toxifying all of that.
Just real quickly, so your takeaway from what Charlie said, there's a cancer. We've been telling people we're not all these horrible things, and we elect somebody who is this horrible. Just real quick.
Charlie's been having a come-to-Jesus moment, if you will,
okay,
lately, where he's realizing, he's kind of going back, looking back at what he's done and saying, I helped contribute to this, and now I'm trying to fix it.
Okay. All right. Stock picks, rising.
Scott Walker, he ascends to become chair of the RGA this week, which we knew was going to happen, but it does a couple things for him. One, it creates an opportunity to build an even bigger national network to raise money for a possible run for governor in 2018. Also, build more of a network in case he runs for president again, which we assume he's going to do someday. He's also, the chatter's picked up, he's going to run again for a third term. Think about it, when there's going to be a President Clinton in the White House, there was a shorter window to be relevant. He could run again for president in 2020 with a President Trump. Now you've got to be relevant until maybe 2028.
Mr. Trump is 70. Go ahead.
So
I understand.
He needs a way to stay relevant. Being governor is a way to be relevant. So that's probably one thing that helps him there. And the Dems, they're just spear. They don't have a bench right now to challenge him. So he's in a good spot, even with poor poll numbers, to win re-election 2018, unless it's a snapback election against the party of the White House.
Because he's the RGA, head of the RGA, that's a good choice. Mixed.
So Tony Evers, so we had John Humphreys this week announced he's going to run for superintendent.
He's Dodgeville superintendent?
I think we are a psychologist down there. He's a former DPI employee.
Okay.
I think he's the fourth or fifth person who's announced plans to run against.
I think he's four.
Evers. What's interesting is Humphreys' announcement said, I signed the recall petition by Governor Walker, but now I support Act 10. I'm a bipartisan guy because here's Jason Fields.
standing next to him at the announcement. Excuse me.
And here's Jeremy Thiesfeldt from Fond du Lac. Now, one, if you're a conservative, because let's see, Evers is going to have the progressive left Democratic, you know, base, if you will. If you're a conservative and you're going, wait, you signed the recall petition, and now you're telling me it's Act 10's okay, that's kind of a hard sell to make. And Jason Fields is not exactly a progressive Democrat. He's going to bring you people from the left. So that was an odd announcement.
An odd supporting cast, Jason Fields and Jeremy Thiesfeldt.
Here's a bigger question for Evers. Republicans have proven they've got a great ground game in Wisconsin, especially in off-year elections. They helped Rebecca Bradley this past spring win a retention race for Supreme Court. Will they turn that machine on to try and go after Evers? Do they want to bother? If you think about it, the Republicans in the legislature and the governor's office hold the power of the purse strings. They set the policy. They don't need DPI superintendent.
There's also a Supreme Court race.
Well, we have a justice up in April, but yes. So far nobody's announced run against her.
I understand.
And so Okay. That's the thing. If there's a Supreme Court race and Annette Ziegler draws a real challenge, they'll fire the machine up to help her out. And along the way say, hey, while you're voting for, you know, Justice Ziegler, here's this person you might want to look at for DPI superintendent. But if that race doesn't materialize, it's hard to get people excited about DPI superintendent.
It sure
fire
is.
Fire the money up.
Okay, falling.
School choice opponents. So Scott Jensen, former assembly speaker, turned school choice proponent and operative extraordinaire behind a couple of groups. There were a lot of ads, did a lot of work in some of the assembly races. He took a victory lap this week with a digital ad that we saw that ran around the Capitol Square, highlighting a half dozen or so Democrats who opposed school choice on various levels, either expansion or whatnot, saying they all lost, and by decent margins sometimes. Now, in addition to being a victory lap, it's kind of a message, people told me, to Republicans outstate that, look, you've been getting beat up about school choice with, you know, sending, quote-unquote, state money to unaccountable private schools. These guys won outstate, even though this issue was raised against them.
I see.
So you shouldn't feel so nervous about this issue when it comes up in the spring because, oh, by the way, after they put the work in these campaigns, they're going to want to see some kind of more progress on voucher schools. What's it going to be? That's a big question. What will we see out of lawmakers, Republicans, this next budget, this next session, when it comes to the choice program, more expansion, easier to get in, higher income, whatever it is, there may be some change we're going to see next session.
That's a good choice. Okay, we're out of time. Programming note, because next week is Thanksgiving, I'm going to be spoiling grandchildren. There'll be no Rewind, but we'll be back with Rewind on December 2nd. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.